We're talking with Dr. Michael Salla, author of Exposing U.S. Government Policies on Extraterrestrial Life. I want to ask one more question, Michael, before we go to the phones. Earlier, and I'm not sure if you were able to listen to our interview with James Carey and a MUFON about this effort by Bob Bigelow and BASS, his new organization, to go out and find technologies, evidence of technologies, investigating UFOs, maybe suppressed technologies. I ask it in this context. In your book, you go into a great deal about suppressed technologies, Otis Carr, Tesla, folks who may have developed anti-gravity type technology on their own and it got buried. How then would you evaluate Bob Bigelow's chances for success with this new undertaking?
Well, we have a different economic climate at the moment. I think when Otis Carr was working on his anti-gravity technology, it was a time when the release of that could really have threatened the kind of conventional oil industry, and that could have had repercussions that caused a lot of fear in those that had much to lose with this kind of technology taking off. Now, today, with the kind of financial meltdown that we're seeing around us, there's probably a lot less opposition to this. And of course, Doug Bigelow is much more resourced than Otis Carr. Otis Carr, they were able to kind of discredit him through the Securities Exchange Commission, placing trumped-up charges for him kind of deceiving people, whereas with Bigelow and Bass, I don't think they'll have that problem. So they're more likely to succeed.
Yeah, Bob Bigelow is not easily deterred or intimidated. We're going to go to the phone lines. Jan in Brooklyn on a wild card line. Hi, Jan. Good morning.
Howdy. I got two questions. My first question is, the ETs that visited Eisenhower, what did they look like? And the second question is more ominous, is that if the technology that they're giving to the secret government, like Firebird stuff with the cell phones and the military, I mean, that's the cell phones could be very destructive. Do you think they're out to hurt us with this technology? And if so, then what do you think about disclosure with everything?
Well, as far as the question about what did the ETs look like, I mean, there are different stories about who met with Eisenhower at different meetings. Now, most of the whistleblowers talk about a human-looking group of ETs having had the initial contact with Eisenhower, and that this human group were very unhappy with the hydrogen bomb development that was taking place during the Eisenhower administration and just before with Truman. But they were kind of rebuffed. And then another group of ETs that were kind of more the gray description came along, and eventually there were agreements reached with those. That's according to most of the whistleblowers who have talked about this. As far as the kind of cell phone technology and similar technologies, I think there is a kind of development of a global surveillance system that's under development, and cell phone towers are a part of that. And, of course, microwave radiation kind of like really does damage to the body, so we need to be very careful about how we use cell phones.
Thanks, Jan. Thanks for that call. Does that answer your question? Are you still there? Jan's gone. We're going to go east of the Rockies, also in Brooklyn. Kevin. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Doctor. Good morning, George. I have an interesting thing to bring up about Eisenhower. You remember back in the 90s, there was a book that was published called The Puzzle Palace. I don't hear people talk about it much, but in that book, all the things we're talking about now were in that book, okay? The man that wrote it, I believe he worked for the Washington Times at the time, and he said while he was writing the book, you know, he was being followed by what you could call, I guess, the two men in black. And they had talked about the Majestic 12, the Bilderberg Group, and all these secrets and technologies that we got today. And about a piece of material that somebody had, that you could crumple this piece of material up, you could hit it with a torch, you could hit it with a saw, a diamond type saw blade, couldn't cut it, couldn't burn it, couldn't do nothing to it. You could crumple it up and it would open right back up. And Eisenhower supposedly on election night eve, before he was leaving office, signed the executive order creating the National Security Agency, which, as you know, runs by no charter, answers to no one, their budget's classified. You can't get nothing. From what the book had said, their budget dwarfs the CIA's budget in comparison. And the only president ever photographed coming out of there was Ronald Reagan. And him, and if you remember Casey, it was kind of odd that both of them got Alzheimer's or memory problems before they passed away. I'd like to know what the doctor thinks about that and if he's familiar with that book, The Puzzle Palace.
Okay, Kevin, thanks for the call. That's a lot to chew on there, Michael. Want to take a stab at it?
Sure. Well, I haven't read The Puzzle Palace, so I can't comment on that. But, I mean, I can comment on the budget of the NSA. I mean, I think it's something I cover in my book in great detail. One chapter is called The Black Budget. And what I point out is that there are, in fact, two black budgets. There's the one black budget, the conventional black budget that most people are aware of, and that basically is used to fund the intelligence community, and it comes from the Department of Defense basically kind of cooking its books to have enough money to go and fund these covert operations and intelligence community. And there's an unofficial black budget, and that comes from kind of much more unconventional processes. And the estimates I have for that are roughly $1.7 trillion a year, which is an enormous amount. And that's the amount that is for 3 years running from 1998 to the year 2000 that... These were auditing anomalies in the Department of Defense budget, basically signaling money that couldn't be accounted for, that was being shuffled around. And that, to me, was the money trail for the black budget. And as I said, it's $1.7 trillion. So it's huge, and the NSA is heavily involved in that, so I'm sure they're tapping into that for some of their covert projects.
I read The Puzzle Palace. I think is the guy's name James Bramford? I might be wrong on that. I think he wrote a sequel to that book more recently, but it's a great book and it's a very scary book. Thanks for that call. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back with more of your questions for Dr. Michael Salla here on Coast to Coast AM. Stay with us. Welcome back to Coast. I'm George Knapp. My guest, Dr. Michael Salla, and a lot of you are on the phone lines waiting to ask questions. We're going to go west of the Rockies. Terry in Portland. How you doing, Terry?
Hi, good evening. I've always believed that the best thing to do would to start disclosure. I have a theory or a suggestion for how the disclosures get started, and I think that do you think it would work? It would be a good idea for them to announce some sort of discovery on another planet, such as Mars or with this Kepler satellite, and make it a major announcement, such as a press conference that would be covered on all the channels on television that says, we discover some sort of life on another planet, ruins or something like that, and then let it sit for a while. Let the public digest that for 5 or 6 months or so, actually, slowly let people know about it, and so that people start to acclimate that, because, you know, most scientists would say that our planet and our solar system is simply one grain of sand and a whole beach of sand and a big cesspool of sand. Anybody that believes that there's no life outside of our solar system, My analogy is that they have their head in the sand, because the chances of life are so great that any scientist, any astronomer will tell you that there's life out there. But I think, what do you think about that, Dr. Salla? Do you think that's a good idea to instead of...
I think he answered it earlier, but we can elaborate on it. He said that early in the program about a possible discovery on Mars as a way to break this out. But go ahead, Michael.
Yes, Terry, there was an announcement by NASA. Basically, I think it was 5 days or just a week before President Obama's inauguration, where they were talking about 90,000 tons of methane gas on Mars, and the scientists were basically saying that this is kind of all but certain proof for the existence of life on Mars, of some sort of bacteria, deep underground bacteria on Mars. They said it's all but conclusive, but certainly they're kind of edging towards that, and certainly I think that's probably the way they would go.
Thanks for the call, Terry. We're going to go to our first-time caller, Holly, in Fort Myers, Florida, which, by the way, that's the last place I ever saw Phil Corso is in Fort Myers. Holly, how you doing?
Hi, George, and hi, Michael. This is Holly from Night Hawk Zone, and I just want to say, if I could, please, if we could send Healing Mind Blast to Mooncat, our own there. I know a lot of people read the site from there. Mr. Sally, my question is, what do you think the relationship was between President Jimmy Carter and the space program and the information that was put out?
Well, Jimmy Carter has a very interesting kind of background in terms of him having had his own sighting, making a pledge that he would release information, and then when he got into the White House, he was denied access by the sitting CIA director, George Bush, and then he had to try to go to Congress to try to get information about this. And then there's a famous attorney, Danny Sheehan, who has talked at length about his experiences at the Congressional Research Service, where he read a congressional research study that was done under the orders of Jimmy Carter. And that study talked about the existence of between 2 to 6 different extraterrestrial civilizations. But it seems that whatever information Carter got, I don't think he was ever fully trusted by those controlling this information. So he got a little bit of information from the Congressional Research Service and whatever other sources, but I don't think he was ever fully briefed.
It's kind of a mixed bag there with Carter, him promising as a candidate to open the files and then reneging on that sort of as a president. We're going to go to our wild card line, Tom in Seattle. Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Hi there, George. Last time I spoke to you, I told you I had 38 alien contacts. I'm up to 40 now, and I have sent a letter off to Obama as a disclosure speech from my gray friends, and I'm wondering if your good doctor would like to hear it. It's a page long, and it touches on every single issue that he was concerned about.
Well, can you give us the short version?
Pretty much. I'll try. First, he says that there's an abundant intelligent life in the universe, and a number of alien races who have been visiting Earth have been doing science here for many centuries. The chief benefit to Earth has been to attempt to guide moral development in the medium of all ancient scriptures and religions for the purpose of avoiding the mistakes they made while allowing us our free will. Almost all in varying degrees are benign towards the human race, without exception, politically, economically, spiritually advanced compared to us, from 25,000 to 60 million years in advance of our technology. They have mastered the use of unlimited energies routinely without destroying themselves to navigate the universe. Here's the best one. The peoples of the Earth will have to work many lifetimes to dispel the universal alien impression that we are dangerous, untrustworthy, territorial, greedy, xenophobic, wild animals armed with thermonuclear weapons. Don't expect to see them land on the White House lawn anytime soon.
That's a good line, Tom. Maybe you want to send a copy of this to Dr. Michael Sala, and maybe he can, if he's ever consulted on how to disclose this story, you can use it as a template. Thanks for the call. We're going to go to Cornelius in Louisiana. Cornelius, get your question in early before we go to this break. What's on your mind?
Yes, sir. God bless you there, George and Mr. DeSeller. And Gina, God bless her, your call screener. The question I had was Henry Kissinger. I don't know if he covers the New World Order. Do you think he's a part of the New World Order? And I'll take my answer off the air. God bless all of you.
Thanks for the call.
I think Henry Kissinger is a key part of the New World Order just because of his close relationship with the Rockefeller family. They have been responsible for the way in which the kind of ET technology has been parceled out, developed by both different corporations, and the strategic planning behind that. And I think Kissinger still plays an important role, and it's not. And for example, he's been visited by some of Obama's briefers, and before that, it was Bush's briefing team. So he's certainly someone who still has a finger in the pie there.
We haven't really got into the discussing New World Order tonight, but what do you mean by it? Do you mean one world government kind of a thing, Bilderbergers, Trilateral Commission, MJ-12? What's your version?
I think there are those that want to set up a one world government who want to use the kind of ET technology as a reason for setting up a kind of tightly controlled, integrated global government which would supervise the release of this kind of technology. And that's where we have all sorts of problems, because I think politically people aren't quite ready to be part of a one-world government.
Did the organizations that I mentioned, like the Trilateralists, the Council on Foreign Relations, are that, where do they fit into your scenario on this?
I think that they're all part of a kind of a network of organizations around the world that are trying to kind of nudge us in the direction of greater global cooperation and integration of markets, and to kind of cooperate more at a political level so that we can essentially form some kind of new world order whereby these advanced technologies can be released. I think the biggest problem that they face from the strategic perspective is how do you deal with rogue nations if these kind of anti-gravity technologies are released, or these free energy technologies are released that could be used for very destructive weapons applications by rogue nations.
And do you think, what's your take on the Area 51 stories, for example, about having these craft, taking them apart to figure out how they work, and then test flying them and building our own? I guess that music tells me we need to go to a break. We'll tackle that question when we come back. We've got some time left with our guest, Dr. Michael Salla. Stay with us on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Knapp. We're talking with Dr. Michael Salla about exopolitics, disclosure. We've got a couple of minutes left into the home stretch, and a lot of you hanging on the phone lines. We'll get to as many of your calls as we can as soon as we come back. I'm George Knapp, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. We're in the home stretch with Dr. Michael Salla, author of the new book, Exposing U.S. Government Policies on Extraterrestrial Life. Wow, Michael, that's a mouthful there. It's a very interesting book. Yep. We're going to go to Frank in Houston on our wild card line. Hi, Frank. How you doing?
Hi. How's it going, Ed?
Hello? We're doing okay. What's on your mind?
Well, actually, I had a question for Mike about an article I read this morning about two satellites that had apparently collided, and one of them apparently held inside a man, or like a being with two androids or something, that was controlling it, and I was wondering if you knew anything about that.
Sorry, Fred, I don't know anything about that one.
Frank, are you talking about the satellites from a couple of weeks ago, the Russian and American satellites?
It may have been. I don't know. I just know that there was two satellites. It was just reported this morning.
Where'd you read it? Or where'd you hear it?
It was actually in the Houston Chronicle.
Oh, well, we'll have to look for that article. I'll run a search on it tomorrow when I'm back at my computer. Thanks for the call. Sorry we couldn't answer it. We're going to go east of the Rockies, Brad in Syracuse. How you doing, Brad?
How you doing, George?
Okay.
I was listening to, before I asked my question, Dr. Salla, I was listening to your promos about the upcoming program on the possible body double of everybody. It sure would get me off the hook of everything I've done in my life, especially with my wife. But my question to Dr. Salla is, I have looked at the interviews with Sergeant Clifford Stone, and I've had other people look at those interviews with him. And to me, he's the most believable person I've ever watched. And I tell people, I say, take away what he's saying. Just look at the man and his mannerisms and what he's saying. And everyone's come back to me and said, I think he's very believable. And I wondered what Dr. Salla thought about that.
Thanks, Brad. Yeah, well, Clifford Stone is actually one of the people I use in a chapter in the book. I use him and Dan Sherman as the two key servicemen, whistleblowers, who give us an idea about how people, personnel are recruited and how they're trained and how they're managed for the covert ET-related projects. If you look at Clifford Stone's life and you look at how he worked for 22 years in the U.S. Army performing these crash retrievals, being trained secretly, going on temporary duty assignments to do this work without his regular military commanders knowing about it, with his military record not saying anything about his secret missions or training for those missions, and what he did in the missions themselves in terms of being the advanced team that would enter in and perform kind of communications with any EBEs found there or render first aid if necessary. Really important stuff, and I think, I agree with you. His testimony is very important.
I think he's a pretty credible guy, too. I interviewed him years ago, 89, 90, somewhere back in there, and I think his story has expanded a little bit since then, but maybe he's just more free to talk about some of the things he couldn't talk about then. Thanks for the call, Brad. West of the Rockies, Mike, here in Nevada. Mike, where are you calling from?
Actually, I'm about an hour and a half north of Vegas, just left. I'm a truck driver, and I'm getting ready to drop down into Mesquite, so I'm over here at the parking area.
Well, we're glad you checked in with us here. What's on your mind?
Okay, I've got a question for both of you guys concerning the alien agenda and the implementation of one world government here on the planet today. And I've got two quick scenarios. Scenario A is there's different alien groups visiting the Earth, and let's say, assume that one group is advising the United States, one the French, one the Germans, one the Russians, Chinese, etc. And they give us advice on technology and politics and military, and they set us about to fight against each other. And whichever human group wins the struggle to implement a one-world government, then that human group, government, and that alien group become the rulers of the world. Now, scenario B is more sinister than that. Instead of calling these alien advisors political or military advisors, let's call them coaches or managers for sports teams. And they do the same thing. They give us, these human governments, the technology to destroy ourselves, and they put us about fighting against each other. And these alien groups up there in their casino mothership laying bets on which human group's going to win the whole thing, and they have a prop bet on when we destroy the whole planet with a nuclear holocaust. So,
and over under, too, yeah.
Over under, yeah. So yeah. Any comments on...
Well, Mike, I think probably the analogy I would use would be colonialism, kind of in the 18th century when you had colonialism, the different European powers trying to kind of ingratiate themselves or take over key countries or areas. And those areas, if we're talking about, say, Pacific Islands or smaller countries, they had to make decisions about which colonial power that they would work with. And I think we're probably in a similar situation in terms of different ET groups trying to get involved. Some are more ethical, some are kind of more power-oriented, and we have to make good choices. And the best way to do that is to be transparent, get the information out there so people can be well-informed, and so that way we can hold the government accountable. If everything's done in secret, well, then we're going to have some terrible things done.
And, Mike, I might add something, is that, you look at the case studies, case reports, national security-type cases from over the years where our military documents we've obtained from the military through the Freedom of Information indicates that the technology that these visitors have is far superior to anything we have, and they've demonstrated a mastery over our most advanced military systems, our most advanced warplanes. I suppose if they, there is a they, and we all tend to agree that there is, that if they wanted to inflict harm on us, I mean, man, they sure could do it. Anyway, thanks for the call. We're going to go to Glenn in Tacoma. Hi, Glenn. Do you have a question for Michael Sella?
Yeah, I do. Actually, I have a comment. Given the fact that, I grew up in Southern California, in the aerospace community. And I know for a fact that we cannot navigate space. We cannot stop, we cannot go, and we cannot change direction. The only thing we have is orbiting technology. Given that, and you consider the fact that the film industry and aerospace grew up in exactly the same place And all the involvement with celebrities over the years with JFK and Howard Hughes, Richard Nixon, so on and on and on and on. And I believe that we have been seeing the biggest hoax ever given to mankind. The whole thing is a film, and they are now perpetuating this lie, and they're running out of perpetuation. That's it.
Well, Michael, you commented earlier, you do think that governments, ours in particular, the American government, have been able to manipulate UFO stories for whatever devious purposes they have in mind.
Well, yes, I think they're definitely going to be and have been spinning the information so that they can kind of prep the public for thinking about this whole ET question in a certain way. And I think the most obvious one will be kind of thinking of ETs as kind of evil or malevolent and kind of here to abduct us and perform all sorts of negative things. So that way you can justify a massive national security apparatus to respond to ETs.
I would add, Glenn, that, you know, it is an interesting possibility that the whole thing is just a movie created by someone to manipulate us for whatever reasons. But I would remind you that there are some, quite a few cases, several thousand, the so-called landing site trace cases that Ted Phillips has talked about on this program a couple of times, where there is physical evidence where witnesses see craft land and these things leave behind burn marks and impressions in the soil. And a movie, I don't think, could do that. We're going to go to our wild card line, Sandy in Canada. Hi, Sandy.
Hi. Can you hear me?
We sure can. You got a question for Michael?
Sure. I'm wondering if he's aware of Phil Schneider, 95 Phil Schneider, went on a lecture tour in the States. Apparently he was tortured and killed, according to the information I have read on the Internet about this fellow. But he was involved in building underground secret bases and makes reference to being involved in a firefight with so-called aliens. One other thing that was mentioned in the information he talked about was that military technology increases about increases about 44.5 years compared with the increase the increased rate of conventional technology. I wanted to get his comments on that.
Sure. Well, Phil Schneider was a very important whistleblower, in my opinion. I mean, he had a very extensive knowledge of civil engineering. I mean, he had material and documentation that he showed to back up his lectures, and he certainly was someone that was very interesting in terms of the information he was releasing at the time about the underground bases, the ET involvement, the kind of 1979 firefight at Dulce. I mean, all of that is fascinating stuff, and kind of dovetails with what a lot of other whistleblowers have talked. I found his comments about the black budget being over $1 trillion to also be very accurate in terms of, you know, my own independent research into that. Finally, the circumstances surrounding his death. I mean, I think he was only on the lecture circuit for just over a year, and he was saying that his life was threatened because of what he was revealing. And then, sure enough, in January 1996, he's found strangled in very suspicious circumstances.
Well, that's spooky. And the Dulce story, you know, it's tough to get a handle on that Dulce story, because on one hand, you know, keep hearing the stories over and over, secret underground base, and that's where the firefight with the aliens happened. And yet, I've known some pretty credible people gone out there. If it was there before, it's not there now. At least that's their opinion.
Yeah, well, they're going to have a conference over there on March 29, I believe, this month, later in the month, at Dulce, the first underground bases conference. So I'll be going, and hopefully I'll be able to see something, or maybe not, but it'll still be a good conference.
What's your take on the Dulce story, though, that there was something underground there?
Well, yeah, I think that there was something there. I think Paul Benowitz was able to kind of do some good work in terms of electronic intercepts of the communications and the craft traveling back and forth into Dulce, and that's why they kind of did the disinformation campaign against him, to discredit him. But a lot of other people have come forward to talk about Dulce, and I think even Bob Lazar talked about a briefing document, 200-page briefing document that he read, talking about a 1979 firefight at an underground base. So, you know, we have all of these different stories, sources about... you know, talking about Dulce or an underground base where there was a firefight. So certainly, even though we can't find anything on the surface, doesn't mean that there's not something deep down underground.
Okay, Sandy, thanks for that call. We're going to go east of the Rockies. Steve in South Carolina. Good morning, Steve.
Well, hi. This is Steve, and I'm just curious whether you have ever read anything about Nikola Tesla's contact with aliens and... it actually goes a little deeper in that Bush Sr. actually knew Nikola Tesla, and that Bush Sr.'s dad was some type of accountant for Nikola Tesla. Do you know anything about that?
Well, actually, there's quite a bit that's been written about Nikola Tesla in terms of his connection with ETs. Arthur Matthews wrote some material about Nikola Tesla, and he was saying that... funnily enough, that Tesla was an extraterrestrial himself. That at the time of his birth, there was a blue light over his family property, and that after that, Tesla showed these signs of genius. He was able to kind of just imagine things, and develop them in his mind. He also developed a kind of radio communications with extraterrestrials. Arthur Matthews talked about that. Tesla was very interested in communicating with ETs and apparently succeeded, but never kind of talked about it too much because he was already having a lot of difficulty with the public in terms of his inventions. And if he went public on his ET communications, that would have just kind of further discredited him, even though he was a very successful inventor.
And I think you get into that in your book, his connection to this Otis Carr guy.
That's right. Yes, he mentored Otis Carr, taught him very quickly all about how to develop some anti-gravity propulsion systems, and Otis Carr was able to build an operational ship that in 1960 it had to be closed down by various U.S. government agencies.
And the connection between Tesla and Otis Carr was that they happened to live in the same hotel together. I think that's what I remember from your book.
That's right, yes. Otis Carr was a student, and he was I think he was a waiter or a bellboy at the hotel that Tesla was living in. And because Tesla kind of saw Carr as being someone that was kind of open-minded, very creative, and very bright, that he kind of just took him aside and briefed him with all this amazing information. And somehow, with all of that information, Otis Carr was able to go away and start building this stuff himself.
Steve, thanks for that call. We're going to go west of the Rockies. Chris in Southern California. Hi, Chris.
Hey, George. How's it going?
Okay.
Hey, my question for the good doctor is, recently I came across some information that the Vatican accepted the theory of evolution, since there's a lot of evidence pointing towards that. I'm just wondering, what does that mean? Is there any sort of negation of God, or is creationism going to be any less, is it going to hold any less water than any other theory? And I guess I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Well, the Vatican has been making some very interesting statements recently. The Pope's chief astronomer, a man by the name of Gabriel Funes, kind of the middle of last year, gave an interview to one of the Vatican newspapers saying that extraterrestrials, if they exist, that they would be kind of ethically a little more advanced than us, that they could be our brothers. And so I think he was kind of... prepping the Catholic world that it's okay to believe in extraterrestrial life, and that the Pope was quite okay with that.
It's amazing the transformation in the Vatican, the Catholic Church, over the last 7, 8, 10 years. I mean, it seems like every month or so they come out with another announcement, doesn't it? Or every couple of months? Michael, you there?
Sorry, I'm here, yes.
Oh, okay. The change in position for the Vatican, it seems like they're... you know, every year or so they come out with some other little tidbit about aliens and their views of aliens and ETs and how it's okay to talk about life on other planets. It's an amazing transformation in a short period of time.
Yes, well, that's right. Before Funes came out with his statements, it was Corrado Balducci who was making similar statements about extraterrestrials being our brothers and being ethically more advanced. So the Vatican Church, I think, is playing a very positive role in that regard, in terms of just kind of getting people used to the idea that extraterrestrial life, if it exists, that they are nothing to fear, and that we can kind of work with them in a close way.
Would your guess be that the Vatican would coordinate that with governments that they're to make sure they're all on the same page? Hey, American government, do you mind if we go ahead and say this?
Well, the Vatican is a very interesting entity. The Vatican was supposedly involved in the 1954 meeting that I was talking about at Edwards Air Force Base. Cardinal McIntyre was alleged to have attended there and then went to Rome to brief Pope Pius, and the Vatican then set up an intelligence service to monitor the U.S. or cooperate with the U.S. in terms of liaising with extraterrestrial life. And so I think that there is a close relationship between the U.S. Government entities that are responsible and know about extraterrestrial life and Vatican.
We got just a short amount of time left here, Michael. How about a prediction from you on disclosure stuff? You want to set a date?
Well, I think we're going to move towards just this period of openness. It's probably going to be about a year or so of openness where we're just getting more information coming out. I think the Obama administration will move more quickly in terms of anti-gravity technologies or free energy technologies. That'll be the first thing. And then I would say probably in a year from now we'll start getting some announcements concerning kind of extraterrestrial life being discovered on other planets, and it'll move on from there.
All right. Well, we'll hold you to that and have you come back in a year, if not sooner, and see if your prediction came true. Thanks, Dr. Michael Sal. Thanks. It was a very interesting program. And check out his book, Exposing U.S. Government Policies on Extraterrestrial Life, if you get a chance. Thanks, everyone. I'll be back next week with what I hope is a real good surprise. Good night.